Cool. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Physical Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Ziggy, and I have a very special guest with me. Today's guest, he brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise to sports physical therapy, the professional basketball world, and academic instructions. He actually worked for, or is working for, or is the physical therapist and strength and conditioning coach for the minor league baseball team, the San Francisco Giants. He serves as navigating athletes in this world of baseball, and we'll kind of explore, kind of dig deep into Tom's mind and how he works with elite athletes, and then how his expertise in both clinical and academic settings shape his way of approaching injury prevention. So, without further ado, Tom, how are you feeling today?
Awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate you reaching out and getting this rolling. It's exciting to be able to talk about my journey and what I do. It's always fun. So,
Yeah, cool. Well, let's get it popping then. So, first question is, so can you share your journey into the sports physical therapy world and like how it led you to be or to work for the San Francisco Giants?
yeah, I think it's kind of started in high school. I knew I wanted to get into the healthcare world at least. I really enjoyed helping people, and I wanted to figure out a way to tie in that desire to help people and while still working in sports, because sports were such a big part of my life growing up. So I think in my like sophomore year of high school, we had to do a project about what we wanted to do in college or post college, and I kind of dove into doing some more research on the physical therapy side of things and knew that was a route I wanted to go. So I did my I grew up in Minnesota. I did my undergrad in Duluth, Minnesota, at the University of Minnesota, Duluth. And I majored in exercise science and biology when I was there. And then I finished school there in 2015. And then in the summer of 2016, I started my physical therapy schooling at the University of Minnesota. So I just went from Duluth down to the Twin Cities. So I stayed in state. And then I was there for 3 years. And I think it was probably my first or second year. I didn't really know that, like, the specialization residency option. I wasn't familiar with that, I guess, going into the PT program. And we had just a general, like, chat talk about different residency programs and what it meant. And I was really intrigued at just the ability to, like, have a year to specialize after PT school and also get the mentorship and build those connections and whatnot. So I actually applied for residencies, for sports residencies, my first year out of school and didn't get in. So I worked as an outpatient orthopedic PT in the greater Minneapolis area and then reapplied the next year and got in, was lucky enough to get in. So I did a residency that would have been like the 2020, 2021. So kind of the COVID
Over there,
year.
yeah.
Yeah. So lucky that I was able to actually do the residency at all. So I feel very, very lucky in that respect. But yeah, I did my sports residency in Minneapolis at M Health Fairview. And then through connections within the residency, I was able to apply and interview for this job with the Giants. And I've been a minor league physical therapist for them at our player development complex in Arizona here for 4 years. I think I said 4 years in August. So just over 4 years.
Nice. So, kind of wild journey, kind of going through, undergrad, being in the Twin City or being in Minnesota, then going down to the Twin Cities and stuff like that, and then finally, landing a spot in Arizona. So, I mean,
Yeah.
obviously, you probably like the weather more down in Arizona than Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only time I really miss the cold and snow is winter time, Christmas time. It's weird to do Christmas in Arizona. It's like the palm trees have lights and stuff, but it's not quite the same
Not
as
the same. Yeah.
back home. So we usually try to get back home over Christmas, but yeah, it was a pretty big adjustment to go from the Midwest to Arizona. They're pretty polar opposite in a lot of respects in terms of the climate, at least.
And culture-wise, I'm pretty sure as well.
Definitely different culture too from Minneapolis to Phoenix. Yeah.
So, take us through like what does like a typical day look like? Because you said you work at the player development facility out in Arizona. So, what does your schedule look like? Does it vary kind of day to day depending on certain player
Yeah.
needs, or is it like a set schedule, or is it just how's it look?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think every facility and organization probably does things a little bit differently, but a typical day for us down here. So we have three of us full time at our minor league facility. So basically, anyone that's at our affiliates, like our various levels of baseball, if they sustain an injury that's going to be longer than probably like 10 to 12 days. We have athletic trainers at every one of our affiliate levels. We don't have physical therapists at each level, so it's kind of a lot to ask our athletic trainers to not only deal with the 26 to 30 healthy guys they have at each affiliate, in addition to trying to rehab guys that have a little bit longer injury timelines. So typically, if the injury is going to be, like I said, that 10 to 12 day mark or longer, they'll send them down to Arizona. So we basically have guys from every level that we're rehabbing year round based on injury. Day to day wise, it varies a little bit. Like in season, we're obviously here more often. We're here, like during spring training, we're here 7 days a week. So we don't take even, like, we have Monday through Sunday, we're here. Our days aren't crazy long, I would say. We typically get in the busy seasons, you know, we're in at like 7 or 8, and we're out by maybe like 4 or 5. So hours aren't crazy. It's more like a volume thing. As far as the schedule goes, like day-to-day wise, it's kind of broken up into guys come in, we'll do a lot of pre-workout stuff with them. So that'll be more of, like, for us at least, a lot of like the prep and modality work. So whatever they need to do, whether it's stretching, you know, heat pack, some occasional soft tissue or mobility type stuff, activation type stuff. And then typically they'll go out for a dynamic stretch if they're able to, depending on what their injury is or what they're rehabbing. And then they'll do all their baseball work and then come back in, do their lifts or their modified lifts with our strength and conditioning in the gym, and then they'll come see us again kind of after the whole day is done. And that's usually when we hit them with like the more aggressive treatment stuff, whether it's the needling, cupping, whatever it may be, to address some limitations or just make sure they're feeling good for whatever they have in store the rest of the week.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then kind of like piggybacking off of that. So I know you said that you kind of like break it down, like the treatment plans and stuff like that when they do come in. Do you guys have like a set, like, I guess, you know, strength and conditioning, like, they talk about different plans and stuff like that, like in season, like prior to season, in season, and like postseason and stuff like that. Do you guys kind of follow some of those guidelines as well? Like, before the season starts, do you guys kind of get them like modality wise, like mobility and stuff like that, and in season kind of regress to some, you know, I guess easier exercise or whatever the case may be to kind of like not hammer them hard too much during the season? Or what does that kind of look like? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it varies a little bit depending on what the injury is. Typically, like, we have a dedicated strength coach that works with us. He's great. He's dedicated to our rehab group. So we have guys, if they're in our group, that are doing rehab and we're in charge of them, they're kind of, in some ways, their separate entity. So they follow the same schedule, but we'll be the ones making their will, as in like the PTs and the strength coach, will be the ones making their daily lifts, their daily rehab programs, in addition to like their daily baseball stuff. So I'd say, like, for example, if a guy comes in and he's post-op for an elbow injury, which we typically see, it's pretty common for us. As soon as they have the okay from the surgeon to start sweating and doing stuff, we're getting them in the gym. I'm typically handing some of that over to the S&C to just do modified lifts, especially since we have a dedicated rehab guy, so he knows how to modify everything. So I'm handling more of like the specific elbow rehab exercises in terms of like range of motion, strength and whatnot. But we're also, you know, having our S&C create modified, like, no grip lower body workouts, opposite arm workouts, anything they can do core that doesn't break their precautions. In regards to like the scheduling for like in season, preseason, I would say, like, yeah, in like pre and postseason, we definitely can be more aggressive in terms of, I keep saying we, like, our S&C, our actually like lifting side of things, we're probably more aggressive in terms of like working on like strengthening and working on, you know, what are your limitations, what are our goals for the upcoming season kind of thing. And then in season, they still get a lot of lifting done, but it's probably going to be 2 times a week versus, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. And it varies a little bit at each affiliate too, but for us down here, typically it'll kind of be based on their throwing schedule or their hitting schedule, but definitely a little bit lower workload, not necessarily from like an intensity standpoint. Like, they're still getting pretty high intensity workouts in. We're just being cognizant of the fact that there's a lot of other baseball workload going on in season. So yeah, we tweak things a little bit based off the player and what they need.
Okay. So yeah, like you said, it kind of depends on what the person has, like the injury and stuff like that, and kind of working around that to kind of modify the treatment plan. And I know you touched upon like specifically like elbow injuries and stuff like that, obviously because of baseball. But how does like baseball related injuries, like unique injuries like that, how does that compare to like other sports that you treated? Is it, a little bit more fun to kind of work with that, or is it a little bit more difficult, or what's your kind of opinion on that?
So like when I was in residency, I didn't see any like elbow Tommy John injuries until I
Okay.
started with the Giants. Yeah, because I remember talking about that in my interview, because I was like, I can't sneak my way through this one if I've never done a Tommy John
If
rehab. But it's
you've never
realistically fairly common unless you went to a residency program that has like a baseball aspect to it, or works with a university that has a baseball program, because they're just kind of unique injuries in general. And at least at the clinic I was in before, when I was working or in residency, a lot of our kind of wrist, hand, elbow, we had certified hand therapists that were doing a lot of those rehabs. So yeah, like in terms of TJ, like Tommy John stuff, it's really not like a super hard rehab process throughout the first, 4 to 6 months. It gets a little bit more. It gets a little more fun when they can start throwing, especially for the pitchers. And then you're being a little bit more like cognizant of workload and whatnot there. But overall, I mean, they're kind of boring, to be honest. They're like just they're
Okay.
tedious. It's kind of like this typical stuff. Like, I remember it feeling so daunting when I came into it. And then once you kind of get the hang of it, it's pretty easy. And it's easy when, like 90% of your caseload
It's
is
like
TJ.
coming. Yeah.
Yeah, I should say like the first part of it's a little bit more boring. I mean, it's like kind of your standard stuff. You're working on getting range of motion back right away, and then you're working on getting muscle stronger, and then kind of reintroducing it to the stress that it needs to do, and then gradually introducing throwing and hitting and whatnot. So that's where it gets more fun, though. Getting the guys able to like get back on the field and do the stuff they really like to do, that's fun. The early parts of it are just kind of, I would say, pretty typical to like an ACL or whatnot, where you're working on, your early post-op stages are, yeah, working on like swelling control, the basics, like swelling control, range of motion, pain management, all of that stuff, and then gently working on that muscle strengthening, muscle activation, that kind of thing. So fairly standard, just I guess unique to this population. Unless you're working in baseball, you're probably not treating a lot of like
Tommy
medial
John,
elbow.
yeah,
Yeah, exactly.
lateral epicondylitis, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So do you use like in that case, like for the elbows and stuff like that, do you use any NMES or like any type of like strength measuring devices to kind of see if it's kind of equal to like the contralateral side? Does that kind of play a part in like the rehab process?
Yeah, probably not as much as we use them for like our knee surgeries or our post-op lower bodies. There doesn't seem to be as much, at least in my experience, as much like muscular inhibition that you see with an elbow, versus like what you see with the quad being inhibited post-op for a knee surgery. So we don't tend to use a lot of NMES. The early stages are a lot of just a lot of range of motion, some manual therapy just to try to kind of control swelling. As far as like, and then we use a lot of BFR,
Yeah,
just to try to load them. Yeah, try to load them appropriately, I guess is the right term for, at that stage. So we let them lift heavy on their non-surgical side. And the goal there is obviously kind of more of a maintenance thing on their non-throwing side, but also we're hoping we're getting a little bit of like that cross-education, cross-symmetry effect where, maybe doing some stuff on their opposite side will be beneficial for their throwing side. But I'd say from like a tool modality standpoint in the early stages, a lot of it is more like the BFR. We have a couple like, modalities that we use that are specific, I think, more to baseball that are somewhat helpful for like the swelling management. But to be honest, I think like the biggest thing is some of like the swelling, like effleurage, just to try to get some of the swelling out. We obviously just have like little compression sleeves, and then to be honest, like the game ready cryo compression stuff is big for us too. So nothing like overly fancy, I would say.
Just kind of keep it simple, just like how you said,
Yeah.
like
And then
it.
I think, and then I guess I didn't answer the last part of your question, but in terms of like objectively, like we keep an eye objectively on the range of motion, obviously, pretty frequently, because we're hoping they get that back by that like 6 to 8 week mark. For strength stuff, at least here, we wait until like the 12 week mark, where we're doing more of our objective strength testing, and then we do have at this level have more like fun tools to use for strength testing. We have a lot of the Vald tools and equipment. So we'll test like shoulder internal external rotation and some of that stuff and some grip strength. We have the dynamometers to test with those. So, but we typically don't start that until a little bit later down the road.
Okay. All right. That kind of leads me into my next question. I was gonna say ask, what are some like unique or what are some challenges that you kind of faced in like working in like professional baseball that people might not be able to see like behind the scenes?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, you have your typical stuff that I think any person working in high level sports will tell you, like the time management and like the work life balance and stuff. And I think that's hard. And luckily for me, like I live here now in Phoenix and I get to go home and sleep in my own bed and see my wife and my kid every night. But that is obviously like a struggle. But I think most people kind of know that is a struggle if you're going to get into sports. I think the hardest thing for me coming into it from like a rehab standpoint was it was really hard for me to get used to the fact of like I had these guys every single day. Coming into the training room, it wasn't like a, even if you see someone post up in a clinic, a lot of times maybe you're there like 2 or 3 times a week seeing them versus like now that they're here, 6 to 7 times a week. So it's like you're making plans for them for every single
Every
day.
single
And that
day.
was like a whole different kind of ball game for me trying to figure out like, all right, they're going to do, if I have to do the rehab stuff every day, I don't want them to like necessarily do strengthening stuff every day, for an like start overusing things. So it's like you're trying to figure out a way to treat the whole body, which was probably one thing I wasn't admittedly very good at when I first started and probably when I was in the clinic, because like if someone comes to see you for a shoulder injury in the clinic, you're probably not going to be like, and hey, this is what you should do for your lower body. Or this is what, it's like you're only focused on the body part. You're not going to be like, yeah, we're going to do, typically, at least I wasn't like, yeah, you have a shoulder injury, you're a football player, we're going to work on doing like squats or, lunging today and then document that kind of thing. So it was like, that was the tricky part. Yeah. And I think that's like the hard part if you haven't been at this level is, treat, and you should probably do that regardless, right? Treat the whole body and make sure like cardiovascular they're good and make sure like lower body's staying in shape, especially when they're playing sports for their job. But that was definitely tricky for me. And then there's obviously like it's not as bad at the minor league level as it is at the major league level, I'm sure, but there's obviously like the pressures from the front office and the people who are paying these guys a lot of money to play. So you occasionally will run into those where it's like you create a timeline and have a setback in there. Why did you have a setback? And you just have to be really good about communicating it's huge, obviously, but you also have to be really good about having rationale for everything you do, right? Like you're not going to say like, oh, he looked good this day, so I progressed him to something super extreme just to get him ready faster. Cause they're going to be like, well, why didn't you do, you went from step A to step D, where'd B and C go? Yeah. So I think having rationale, and not that I necessarily didn't do that in the clinic, but I think that there'd be a lot of times, especially if you had a busy patient like caseload day and you're doing stuff, you're like, well, I need to strengthen, and you're just hitting them with your basic strength and exercises. You're not really having necessarily like a ton of rationale as to why you did things, and you can't necessarily get away with that as easily in professional sports.
And I think you brought up a really good point about like, front office and pressure with the front office, getting the player back right, and obviously, progressing them as tolerated or, as correctly. And my next question was going to kind of lead into like that team kind of aspect. So how much back and forth and how much conversation do you have, obviously with the front office, with like some sports nutritionist, with the athletic trainer and stuff like that? Do you guys usually have like, weekly meetings or so about, hey, X player is progressing like this, so I'm gonna try to do this. Okay, I gave him, this type of food to, or, whatever the case may be. Do you guys have like those collaborative efforts, like weekly or however many,
Yeah.
often?
Yeah, usually during, so we have a pretty like extensive team that works with us down here. So we have us as PTs, we have a couple athletic trainers that work with like our lower level rookie ball teams who are here. And then we have dietitians on staff, we have the strength and conditioning, obviously, we have mental health, mental skills. We have kind of the full gamut, which is super nice. Yeah, as far as collaboration goes, during like spring training, we'll have morning medical meetings basically every day, just going through specific plans. As far as the rehab group goes, we have probably more like weekly meetings or talks, especially with our S&C department based on progressions and whatnot. And then we actually have a dedicated rehab like pitching coach that will help us with We're kind of the ones developing the actual throwing program, like volume intensity type stuff, but he's there to help us with all the mechanical work and whatnot. So having meetings with him and discussing things there. As far as the nutrition stuff, that's typically it's I think really important like right away post-op, and that's where our dietitians do a really good job of supplementing. So a lot of a lot of like the collagen, a lot of the protein, a lot of that stuff that they may be not getting into their diet quite as much early on post-op, or maybe if they are getting it in, just some stuff that's going to not necessarily speed up the healing process, but help it a little bit. So we lean on them a lot more heavily in those like early post-op phases, I would say. And they do a good job trying to check and maintain like body composition. And if there's a, they usually have like a set weight goal for these guys too. So they're really good about like the education in regards to the meal prepping, meal planning, excuse me, type of stuff. So yeah, it's definitely a team effort, which is fun.
And then going back to what you said about like the collagen, I know I had another podcast interview I did with Jessica Isaacs, and she was like sports dietitian for USC, and she was saying how creatine is actually like she pushes creatine, and like as there's been like so many studies done like on athletes about like recovery, like memory too, and stuff like that. So I wonder that there's like I mean obviously dietitian probably speaks on that behalf, but do you kind of encourage like creatine, like those type of scientific based supplements that kind of help with the process, the healing process?
Yeah, I would agree with what you just said that like creatine, like I feel like that always got a bad rap when I was like going through school or not even PT school, but going to like high school and college and stuff, and how you don't want to take too much of it because it's bad for your kidneys and blah blah blah. But yeah, there's a big push here for sure to up the creatine load for most people, just for like what you said, like the cognitive health piece of it, the obviously like muscle recovery, healing aspect of it, the protein synthesis type stuff. But yeah, there's definitely been a big push. I don't do much of that education since we have dietitians on staff. But yeah, there's definitely a big push, like the creatine, the collagen early on. We also like our guys get blood work most like every spring training, so like they can look at blood panels and lipid panels and see if there's a person that's like if they're suspect to being deficient in some area, then the dietitian team can kind of supplement very specifically for them. So we have that as well. But yeah, I would say the biggest push that I've seen is probably like the creatine. The protein powder stuff is huge, obviously, but the creatine's been a big push.
Big push. Okay. I always find it interesting. I kind of wish, I kind of listened to more podcasts going through school because I feel like, just hearing a lot of people's like different opinions about like different aspects and stuff like that. I saw one video about like a chef for one of the NBA players, which is kind of like crazy because they even talk about like what food or like high end like this nutrients and stuff like that. So we need to give them like this type of food after they work out to help them recover, or like this type of food before they play a game to help them with their energy and stay like quick on their feet. So it's obviously really interesting to kind of like have those like different opinions, different like aspects and like venues to kind of listen to and kind of draw from. So.
Yeah, for sure. That is super cool. Yeah, it's very like niche, and like the sports world is so small once you actually get into it. Like a lot of it like boils down to like obviously being good at what you do, but I think also like who
Right,
like the
exactly.
networking piece of it's
Yeah,
huge.
I think that's the biggest part is just, it's about who you know, because one person can lead you to another person that can land you that dream job that you always dreamed of. So, yeah, so
Yeah, for
kind of like
sure.
all ties in together. But it's on that note, my next question was going to be, do you have any success stories about like a specific athlete that you work with or that you've seen that you kind of seen them go through the whole process and you kind of sat back and was like, wow, like I don't know, you ever had one of those patients that you kind of just helped out and you kind of just feel like really good about yourself that they're happy that they're able to like do the motion that they've been doing before or couldn't do before and getting them back on their feet?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like the one of the most like fun and rewarding parts of working a job like this. Like we get to see these guys from like a lot of guys or several guys I've seen. I've been in the surgeries, like watching their surgeries with the surgeon, which is pretty cool. And then you're seeing them the next day, day zero, day one post-op. And then you're seeing them through that all the way. Like if it's a Tommy John, you're seeing them for a year until they start throwing again. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, I have a guy right now. I've gotten a player that I've gotten pretty close with. He's a really good guy. He's had a couple like setbacks. He actually had a back surgery went a couple years ago now, and then came back from that surgery, was doing well, and then ended up having to have Tommy John. So now we're finishing, like, he just threw like against live batters for the first or second time here this past week, so he's ready to start kind of a game progression. And he's actually going to be pitching in the fall a little bit here in Arizona, which is cool. So yeah, kind of looking back and seeing, thinking like, dang, like a year ago we were barely able to move your elbow, and now you're, throwing 98 miles an hour. Like, that's pretty cool. And I think for the vast majority, the guys are super appreciative. They know how much time that we've dedicated to helping them get better, and we give up a lot of our free time to help them and stuff. So they're always very, very thankful for what we do, and it's super rewarding. It's really cool when you get to the point where, like, now that I've been here for a few years, there's been guys that we've rehabbed, several years ago that have ended up making it to the major league level, and that's pretty cool. It's cool to see, like, the guys that are like, I did your rehab 2 years ago, and you were the one who put in the hard work and the time and the hours to get better and work on your craft, and now it's all kind of paying dividends, and you're making your debut. Those are pretty cool moments for sure.
And that kind of reminds me of there's like a saying, my classmate said it, but it's like physical therapy is like us, like if we're in the car together, like me and my patient. Or yeah, and we're kind of guiding them to like the freeway, and the freeway is basically like them, taking off and doing what they need to do. So we're basically like kind of guiding them to the freeway. Then once you get to the freeway, then it's kind of like, okay, all right, it's your time to shine, and then they kind of just like take off and do what they need to do. And I think
For
that kind of,
sure.
it's like a testament to, that those success stories. Like obviously you're a part of that rehab process, but themselves like put in like all that work and trying to get better, trying to get stronger and stuff like that. And you kind of just like gave them the necessary tools to get better. And then once they get there, then they're there. And so it's not like, as soon as you get Tommy John that, you have to start from square one from like throwing mechanics. Like obviously the kind of idea of like how to throw and stuff like that. So he's not like a toddler trying to throw. And you kind of have that mindset, once you get better and you can throw, then it's like how you threw before when you before you got injured. And so I agree. It's kind of like guiding them, giving them necessary tools to kind of get them back on their feet. And it's just exciting,
It's
amazing.
super cool. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, like, it's obviously, like, it's probably doesn't really compare to, like, the people who work in the hospital systems and get people up, walking for the first time after a surgery or moving after a stroke or whatnot. Like, I think those are obviously, like, very, very rewarding, but, like, it's rewarding in its own respect, right? Like, for these guys, like, baseball is their life essentially. It's their job at this point when you get to this level. So it is like a really cool feeling. Like, I don't think it probably trumps, like, the ability to, like, if you're working, hospital or peds or whatever it may be. Like, those people do amazing jobs, those PTs and PTAs and everyone involved, but it is a pretty cool feeling, even at this level, to, like, get these guys back and playing. Like, a different type of success story for sure.
Exactly. So, I mean, if you were to give like any advice to, I guess, like an aspiring physical therapist that wants to specifically work in like the baseball world, I guess what advice like would you give them in order to get to that level?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing for me, like, I'm a huge proponent of doing, like, the residency, because that's the route I went, and without the connections I made through the residency, like, I wouldn't have landed this job. But obviously, you can get into this field, especially high level baseball, without doing a residency. But I do think, like, regardless of what you do, like, having someone who's willing to be a mentor and willing to make you, or not make you, but help you with some of the critical thinking and clinical reasoning stuff is huge. And I think that's what was so helpful for me during the residency. And then additionally, you and I were talking about it a little bit earlier, but the networking piece of things, like, I mean, a good thing and a bad thing, like, a lot of it boils down to, like, who you're gonna have really good candidates for these job positions, but typically it helps if you know someone. And I think that without, for me, like, the connections I had through our residency program were super helpful. So I think, like, kind of on that same line, like, you never know, like, what connection you're going to make that's going to, like, pay dividends for you down the road, kind of thing. So I think, all these connections you make, don't take them for granted. Find someone who's willing to help you and to put you in touch with some right people. And, I think the big thing for me too is, like, you can learn stuff from everyone you work with, right? Like, always having that drive and that kind of the ability to not stay complacent, you know, even though like for me, I've been doing this for a few years now and I still feel like I have so much more to learn. I feel like I'm getting to be fairly confident in my skill set, but there's so much more for me to get better at and to learn. And I think the people that you see at this level that are really successful are the ones that aren't complacent. They're not going to say like, oh, this has worked in the past and that's the only thing I'm going to do. And obviously there's a piece of that that you need to do for sure. Like anecdotally, like stuff will work for you that maybe isn't necessarily super research based. But I think just that drive for kind of higher knowledge and wanting to continue to get better as a clinician is huge as well.
It's big. Yeah. I totally agree. I think sometimes I find myself, thinking in the past, like, hey, this worked before my last patient, so I'm gonna try it this time. But, I actually started buying books and like, talking to other people and think like, hey, what's like another way to kind of, treat this patient, whatever the case may be. And like learning, like you said, just getting different bits and pieces of knowledge from like different people, you can kind of like incorporate that and put it like in your toolbox that you can take out like whenever it is necessary. So like you said, sometimes like we do things like the same way, like you said, anecdotically. I can't even say it. I can't say the word. But some things that we do like on a regular basis, like habitually and stuff like that. But sometimes there is like a time where we need to kind of step out of our comfort zone and like try new things or like learn different things or like get this certificate or whatever the case may be to kind of like, up your knowledge and kind of, think of like other things that you can do to kind of help out different populations.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's, you know, and for like for us, and you kind of hit on it too, but like, especially in the baseball world, that like, there's so much research coming out all the time. So, like, for us, like, one of the things I try to do is stay on top of it a little bit, the research, the new and like emerging research. And not that you're going to necessarily be able to like read an article and implement it right away in the clinic or in the training room setting for me, but like, I think it's important to kind of stay on top of things and at least be willing to acknowledge that there might be new and better ways to do things that even you're not used to. And to also acknowledge that there's just like a ton of different ways to treat people and make them better. So there's not necessarily one right way to do everything.
Right, exactly. And then you kind of touched on literally like my next question I was going to ask, like evidence-based stuff. So I know you say you try your best to kind of like stay on top of evidence and everything too. And I don't know if you've like read any pertaining to this, but I know like for throw mechanics, like the kinetic chain, having that adequate like hip rotation, like core movement and stuff like that when you're hitting. I know we talked a lot about like pitching and stuff like that, but even when you hit and stuff like that, do you incorporate any type of like lower trunk motions or like rotations, hip core stability exercises as well to kind of help get that proper kinetic chain where everything kind of like fires on at once?
Yeah, I think that I would say on our end, we definitely focus between like the PTs, what we program, and then what our rehab strength coach programs. Like, we're definitely focusing on the whole body and the kinetic chain throughout the whole rehab process. So, like, you know, these guys that are early to rehab, they're going to be doing modified lower body stuff and a lot of rotational core work as long as they're staying within the confines of their precautions, basically. But yeah, and then it's in terms of like the physical, like, teaching of the mechanics, like a lot of times, like our coaching staff will do that. That's not necessarily us quite as much. But yeah, that's where we're super, super lucky in this setting to have like a dedicated rehab strength coach, a dedicated coach that can help us out with like our pitching mechanics and whatnot. And we also have, I don't know how many teams at the minor league level have it, but we actually have an in-house biomechanics lab here. So we have mounds that have like the motion capture, camera systems, and then we have the in-ground force plates, and we have it set up for both like a pitching mound and for the hitters. So then we can utilize that too. And I would say that's typically maybe later down the road when they're getting back to kind of full effort, if we don't think things look quite the same as they did, or if there's maybe something that, you know, sometimes we'll subjectively hear guys say like, I feel like I'm throwing at my harder intense, but there's something left in there. I just can't kind of unlock it. And then sometimes if we do like the motion capture stuff, we can kind of pick up on some little things in the biomechanics lab that maybe they were doing better or differently before the injury, and then we can compare, you know, pre-post almost, try some things, and then we can have them throw again or whatnot and see if things improve. So we've got a lot of tools at our disposal, but yeah, we're definitely trying to be very cognizant of the fact that even though if it's an upper or lower body injury, like the whole body's going to be affected, and we can't really slack on,
One
we
thing.
can't, we can focus on the injury at hand, but we need to make sure that we are taking care of these other components as well.
And I think it's really beneficial, like you said, to have like all those tools, especially, in like a major league, minor league, it doesn't really matter, but any like professional sport in general. I think it's really beneficial to have those because, like you said, you can kind of measure certain things like the ground force reaction or motion capture and stuff like that to kind of get them back and get them, normal again and kind of have them move the way that they used to move. And that kind of goes into like the, I know you probably heard of the Throwers 10 program and everything too. How often do you guys kind of implement that like religiously during like your rehab process, or do you incorporate some aspects of it into like your baseball players to not only help them but also like to prevent injuries as well?
So we have like in-house rotator cuff and scap exercises that are, pretty much all derived from the Throwers 10. They're not those necessarily those 10 and then like the advanced Throwers 10, however many total exercises there is now, but kind of all of those exercises are incorporated into our various rotator cuff and scap programs. Typically, for I would say for the rehab guys, they're doing those around 3 times a week in addition to the stuff they're doing in the gym. We try to be somewhat smart about it just so we're not having them do rotator cuff stuff every day and then developing like an overuse tendonitis type thing because they've done so much of it. But I think we've done a really good job the past like 2 or 3 years down here. We've actually kind of revamped our arm care just because, not that that stuff's bad at all. I just think that like the throwing motion is so violent and places so much stress on the shoulder and the body in general that a lot of times if we just only do these, sets of exercises where we're for the most part using minimal weight and going at, fairly slow tempo, like we're probably not doing the players a ton of justice because of how violent and aggressive the pitching motion is. So we've started to kind of trying to put things into buckets, like kind of find the movements, like if we're doing shoulder, like flexion extension, kind of the planes of motion, like ERIR, horizontal abduction, adduction, and trying to find exercises that work through those various movement patterns, but also then like not only doing like concentric stuff, but like okay, like we can do concentric, we can do eccentric, and then we can do like a speed of contraction. I think that stuff's been big. So we've added in a lot more of like, yes, you can be strong into external rotation, you can do it concentrically, we can do it eccentrically and overload you, which is probably gonna be really beneficial for like that deceleration motion for the pitchers. But then also like your shoulders having to go from maximum external rotation into internal rotation super, super fast and super aggressively violently. I think I've used that word like 3 times, but so we'll do like some more speed of contraction stuff. So like the tantrum exercise that a lot of people will use for like a hamstring rehab, like we'll use that for, we'll use that for like upper body. Like we'll put a band across our squat rack and have them put their arm in there and then they're just like flying through ERIR. So yeah, we use like the basic premises of the Throwers 10 and we use all those exercises throughout rehab and with our healthy guys. We just try to make sure that we're adding in some things to make sure that what they're gonna have to do on the field, they're gonna be ready for. And it's
Gotcha.
hard to mimic, like throwing's really hard to mimic in the gym, but you can kind of break down the individual pieces and try to figure out ways to address those areas.
Yeah, and you kind of touched on it, like the eccentric and concentric phase. I know I had a baseball player, or softball player, excuse me, and she had trouble, obviously in her shoulder joint. But I know one exercise you take like a little medicine ball, and then you like stand behind the patient, and then the patient kind of across and like kind of throws it back, or even with like a medicine ball, you kind of throw it back just to kind of load that posterior aspect, and like kind of like how you touched on like that deceleration phase, it kind of helps kind of have that like better network and better neural pathway, better muscle contraction with that throwing and
I think
implementing
that stuff's super
that.
helpful. It's also like it feels way more familiar for them too, because like the throwing motion, or like if you're doing something that you can mimic the throwing motion, it's super helpful. So yeah, we do a lot of that. We call them like half kneeling. We jump half kneeling, like plyo decel catches and throws. So a lot of times we'll throw it to them from behind, like you were saying. So they're actually physically catching it and then deceling it through, like you said. And then a lot of times they can throw it back. So they're getting like the concentric and eccentric phase too. So yeah, I think anything you can do that is more salient and more similar to what they're gonna have to do in sport is beneficial too. And kind of the combination of movements, you're hitting a lot of different movements in one exercise there too, which is beneficial.
I think all those, like you said, kind of incorporate and kind of, like you said, help out the patient and get them back on their feet, get them to throw again, and get them back in the major leagues like one of your athletes did. So that's really good. So we'll kind of get to like the end of the interview. So I guess some like quick fire fun questions to kind of ask, and then kind of see what's your take on it and stuff like that. Okay, really get to
Sounds good.
show out your personality and everything. Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
So what's your favorite ballpark food you've had while traveling with the team?
I mean, so when I went up to San Francisco, I actually went up just like as a spectator my first year. My wife and I actually went up for our first wedding anniversary. We were up there, and they're kind of known for like their garlic fries is one of the things,
Oh,
and
really?
those are super good. Like just traditional ballpark food, I'd probably say I do just love like a regular hot dog, and I'm a big soft pretzel guy. I like
Oh,
pretzel and
really?
cheese.
Yeah,
Yeah,
you got
I
there
think
with
those get a bad rap,
the
but I'm a
cheese.
big pretzel and cheese guy.
Yeah, I never tried pretzels. I would do the garlic fries. Those sound actually pretty fire, but
They're super good.
Okay. So what's the most underrated tool used in baseball that you can think of? Like most it could be a recovery tool, it could be like a modality. What do you think is like the most underrated?
I think for me personally, like from like an evidence standpoint and just like helpful in a lot of different realms, like VFR is super, super helpful. And maybe not the most underrated, but I think it's something that like there's models now obviously that aren't super expensive. So I think, a lot of people are able to potentially get their hands on them. But the VFR is like such a nice way for us to be able to load people who can't load appropriately, whether it's post-op or whether things just hurt, or using it as kind of a recovery modality, which we've done more recently in the past few years. The super cliche answer I would say is like the rest. Like rest is so important, and it's really hard at this level to like. I mean, you can have like your like obviously sleep. I mean, I guess when I mean rest, I mean like not throwing a baseball 24/7 kind of thing. Because a lot of these injuries we see, like even if they're acute, it's like acute on chronic. It's not just like one moment in time did it. It's like, yeah, one moment in time hurt their shoulder, but it's probably because they threw for, 7 months before that. Yeah, exactly. So it's like I think it's a hard thing to get players to buy into, especially at this level, but like the rest and the just letting your tendons and muscles and ligaments have a little bit of break from all that stress can be super, super helpful in terms of recovery. That's kind of a cheater answer, but
Okay. Is it still going? I still like it. I still like it. So next question would be, if you weren't a PT, what would you be doing now? If you didn't take the PT route, what else would you have chosen?
yeah. Oh man, that's a good one. I don't know what I would be doing. I always joke around with my wife that if I was like musically talented, I'd like to like be a musician or something, but I literally have no musical talent whatsoever. I just think it'd be so cool to be able to like be on a stage and command a crowd and stuff. Like that'd be awesome.
Now,
But I don't have
are you singing too with the instrument, or
Well,
like
I think, yeah, in a perfect world, but there's no chance I personally am. Like that would be terrible. Like no one would come and see that. That would be bad news. I think that if for like an actual job I could see myself doing, I feel like it kind of fall into the same realm, but I feel like I could see myself doing like coaching or doing like my dad was a phys ed teacher when I was growing up, like doing something like that. I really like the teaching aspect, and I've done a little bit of that, like even in the PT world, some like adjunct therapy or adjunct professor stuff, and I really like that. I mean, that's kind of a cheater answer. It's still kind of PT, but I think teaching would be cool.
Yeah, still different profession. Wait, so what instrument would you play? Or would you just be like
I
there?
think the guitar would be sweet. Yeah, just like the guitar, just being able to like shred on a guitar would be sweet.
There's some like Jimi Hendrix going on and stuff like that. And Prince. Okay. My last question would be, one thing about working in pro baseball that people would be surprised to learn.
That's a good one too. I think that people would maybe be surprised with some of like I think some of it would be like salary wise, like it's kind of crazy, like well, salary of like what we make, like I think there's always the impression that if you work in high level sports you're making like an astronomical amount of money, which isn't necessarily the case all the time. It's also crazy knowing all the salaries that your players are making, like
Oh,
just the amount of money that goes through professional sports is wild. I think one of the biggest things for me is like these guys, even though they're, and I'm sure it's the same for every sport, but it's like whenever I have a student, we have students that come on rotation here with us, and I always tell them like, you got to remember these guys, like baseball is their jobs. Like there's so many guys that love to talk about basically anything but baseball.
Yeah,
It's
man.
one of those things where it's like, it's kind of wild, but you'll talk to them and it's like, you don't have a whole conversation and you didn't mention one thing like baseball related. And I
Yeah.
think that was kind of funny for me. But I mean, it makes sense. Like just from the human aspect, like
Yeah, I
it'd
was
be like,
around here for so long. Is this
yeah,
not
it'd be like you and
what
I,
some of
like,
those?
yeah, it'd be like you and I talking every single day about PT stuff. You're like, at some point, it's like, you're not going to want to talk about PT. You do it all day. You don't want to go home and do it on yourself kind of thing. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's all the question I have for you. Again, like I said, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for taking your time out of your day to kind of talk to us, talk to the audience about like what you do and kind of aspects and the intricacies of working with the baseball team. I would love to kind of stay in contact with you. If it's okay, I can
For sure.
kind of put like either your Instagram or like email with some of your
Yeah.
posts and stuff like that, just in case that someone is like kind of interested in like learning more, and if it's okay,
Yeah, for sure.
kind of reach out to you and stuff
For
like
sure. Yeah, I'm always willing to help. It's yeah, I'll get you my Instagram or LinkedIn or something that's easy
that.
to get a hold of me. But yeah, I appreciate you taking the time too. It was really fun to talk to you, and I think all the questions you asked were awesome. So I appreciate it, Ziggy.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. Hold on, let me change this. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in and listening. Stay tuned for the next episode when it drops. But I hope you guys have a great day. I hope you guys learned something and took something out of this. Thank you. All right, hold on, stay on. I just wanted to kind of just end it. Sorry.
No, you're good.